Before we dive in, a shout out from our sponsor, Growth Collective. Are you truly satisfied with your ad buying partner? Do they bring constant creative ideas, consistently hit your targets, and offer impeccable service? If you're shaking your head no, let's talk about Growth Collective. The largest businesses are unlocking growth by focusing on what truly matters for brands in 2024. Constant creative output. Growth Collective has flipped the agency model upside down, being a creative first agency, supported with a superb ad buying team with over $500 million of spend. They've worked with some of the largest D2C brands like BombTech Golf, Hush Blankets, CrossNet, and Firebelly Tea. Here's something truly exciting. Growth Collective is offering you, our listeners, a free comprehensive ad account and creative audit. Discover hidden trends within your account, pinpoint untapped audience segments, and unlock creative possibilities to turbocharge your customer acquisition efforts. Ready to implement a strategy that supercharges your brand's growth? Visit wearegrowth.co and mention the Unofficial Shopify Podcast. Unlock your store's potential with a growth partner with a proven track record like Growth Collective. That's wearegrowth.co. This is an interesting episode. I recently came into possession of a long sword, a large, gold, very sharp, very real katana. Unusual purchase. And our guest today recently came into possession of a Tesla Cybertruck. One of my more unusual guest intros, for sure. But we're talking to Isaac Medeiros, who, known for Mini Katana, easily one of the most successful YouTube Shorts content creators, who also happens to sell totally awesome katanas, and has started up a new brand, Can Pie Foods, which is just these great freeze-dried candies that I really enjoyed. Not as much as my kids. They totally stole my candy stash. But yeah, we are joined today by Isaac Medeiros from Mini Katana and Can Pie Foods. I'm your host, Kurt Elster.
Jack Nasty.
And this is the Unofficial Shopify Podcast. Your two Shopify online stores, you got Mini Katana and Can Pie Foods, right?
Yeah. Mini Katana is the real DTC brand. Can Pie is like 99% on shelves retail.
You know, I saw it last weekend. I was at Box Lunch and I saw Can Pie Foods.
Oh, really? You're like that's very early. We're 5 months in. So like, that's awesome.
I took a photo of it. It was one on a shelf, but I like immediately recognized it.
Being on shelves is a totally different game. A year ago, when I was like, before I started this brand, I was doing a lot of market research and I was kind of going to different stores. And I went through this phase where every single brand I picked up on a shelf, I would look them up online. I'll look up their Instagram, YouTube, TikTok, and just get an idea of their follower count and their viewership presence, right? And I discovered, like, it's kind of crazy how there's different laws here, because most of them have no online following whatsoever. Like, you have these brands that, like, nobody online knows they exist, but on shelves, they're absolutely ripping it with huge numbers.
So let's go backwards. Mini Katana, well, when did you get into e-com?
Mini Katana started in early 2021. So that was kind of the first brand I launched that was successful. Before that, I had a drop shipping store when I was a teenager, if that counts. But I don't think that's a real success story there.
So you weren't entirely new to it. And did you have what was your background before you started Mini Katana? Like, marketing experience at all?
I was a digital marketing specialist at like a startup. And like, unfortunately, I just wasn't making a lot of money. And it was during the pandemic, so I kind of like I was just desperate to do something. And Mini Katana ended up being like a happy result from that. But I was always launching brands or projects before that, so I'm a real tinker.
I think that's such a valuable skill, to just be willing to like play and try things and have hobbies and interests turn into passions and projects and businesses. Now, I have one of your katanas. It is full size. It is very much not mini. The name of the brand is Mini Katana. Tell me about, what's the origin? And of all things, why sell katanas? How did this happen?
It's not on purpose. I mean, so the vision for the brand was letter openers. And the story goes, I was in like little Tokyo here in LA. I ran into a cute little letter opener that was samurai themed. I bought it for $50. It fell apart when I got home. And I was just like, wow, you know, I'm not like, I'm an idiot for buying this thing, but there's obviously like a little bit of a niche market for this. Let me just make a better version. So that was step one. I got a better version of it. Essentially, I lied to manufacturers in China. I said I was bigger than I was, convinced people to send over samples and maxed out my credit cards. And we launched on Meta. At the time, Meta works for everyone, basically, still. And I was like, this is the easiest way to go to market. And Meta banned us within a month of that launch. I already reordered inventory. So like absolutely maxed out on everything I had. I even took out a small loan from a friend. So I just like got all this inventory and I was like, you got to do something, right? You're stuck with it. And TikTok was, I was a user of TikTok through the pandemic. So I knew about the app. And I ended up making some TikTok videos. And it wasn't at first to market on TikTok. It was more like, this is a great video platform. Let me make videos to use on Snapchat or Pinterest, because I was trying every marketing channel I could think of at the time. But the first video sold like a single unit. I was like, oh, what's going on here? You know, this is interesting. I didn't expect this. And then the third video sold me out. And we were just shocked at the time. So
you're like, let's just try TikTok because it's got a decent interface and editor and we can use the content elsewhere. And you ended up making sales off of it. Like one sale, you're like, something here. Three sales. And then by the third video, you cleared out the inventory. Because you needed to solve a problem, which was Facebook told you to go away.
Yeah, but I knew it was again, I knew it was a good product because Facebook worked, right? Like a good product to work across multiple channels typically. It's just that one channel is more suited for it. And that's like a core lesson. Like with Compi, we tried launching everywhere. It's just that retail grows the fastest, right? But what happened is because I was making all these videos myself, you get a lot of feedback from the community directly. And the community was like, you guys need to make big swords. So we grew very quickly, year one, to over 2 million in revenue by just like pre-ordering large swords, basically. And that was a crazy ride, but it worked out. And then year two, we kind of pivoted full time to the big sword thing, but kept the name. Year two, we also launched on YouTube. That was like, at the time I was like, you know, TikTok is a really stupid platform. I still maintain that, by the way, to anyone out there. Like everyone thinks I'm crazy for saying it, but I think TikTok is a stupid platform and it will die. So then we went, okay, let's launch on YouTube because that's where the real creators are and where the real money is or where the real audience is, right? And now we're about to hit 10 million subs 2 years later. And it's been an incredible journey.
10 million subscribers.
Yeah.
On YouTube.
Yeah.
Well, you said something we can't skip over. You were really dumping on TikTok.
Yeah, no, it's like the worst platform for creators.
Are you on TikTok Shop?
So I have it for the candy brand, and I think it's like the worst customer base I've ever seen.
Why? What's wrong with them?
I think the way they launched it, just too much of a coupon-y. Like they just went the Temu strategy. It's like, no, you're trying to build sustainability and value, right? Everyone bragging about crushing right now, and I don't mean to offend anyone. Like I'll ask you, how much of your sales are coupons and incentives from TikTok the last 12 months? I bet half, right? So like that's a big red flag to me. And I think that just attracts the wrong type of customer. We see a lot higher repeat, a lot more value from retail.
You know, a similar thing happened with Groupon, right? It's like, oh, you could get people were really excited about it. Big trend. Everybody's got to get on it. But the customers you got from it weren't sticky. And then on top of that, they were bad customers. And it wasn't profitable for, you know, whatever physical store because they were so reliant on discounting to make it work. And so you're right. When I hear you explain it, it's like, oh, TikTok Shop ends up being Groupon all over again.
Yeah. And I think it's the best mobile app ever built. And like the second point to why I don't like it very much is I think it completely destroys that experience. I have a lot of creator friends, right? I think a lot of DTC consumer people have a lot of consumer friends and they don't realize how hostile TikTok is to creators. Like, it's the small things. YouTube, you get to 100K subs, they send you an award. I have like 7 of them, right?
Yeah, I see a couple back in the background.
They really love you and they give you access to real-time support. You can reach a person there really easily. TikTok, it's like, you don't matter. We don't care.
Mm.
I know people with 10 million followers on TikTok who haven't been verified and they've never like really been treated like a human being by the platform. So that's when you carry that mentality, I don't see how you succeed against YouTube.
And so, you know, because like YouTube Shorts, IG Reels, very similar, same format, similar idea as TikTok. So it's not like that same thing can't exist outside of TikTok. You're seeing the success on YouTube Shorts. Run me through it. Like, let's hear those metrics because my jaw dropped the first time I heard these.
Well, I want to preface by saying YouTube is a much bigger platform for video than Meta and TikTok. So that's why the metrics are so big, because you go all in on the largest, most valuable platform and you have the biggest outcome. Across our channel network, we get about 500 to a billion views a month. It varies.
A billion.
That's scaled over time. So sometimes, you know, we think it's going to be double that next year. The last 30 days, we've added 800,000 subscribers to the main channel. And we dub in Spanish and French. Just a lot of reach on that platform.
With your experience, what are the differences between, like, if I'm posting portrait video, TikTok, Reels, or YouTube Shorts, or does the same content realistically translate?
No, not anymore. It's interesting. I think a lot of people think that Shorts is just reposts from TikTok. I think the audiences are very different. Name and point, TikTok is banned in India. So if you have any success on Shorts, you're going to have 10% of your audience is going to be Indian automatically.
Interesting.
But I think the audience on YouTube seems to be much older on average. And you can just reach a very wide berth of people. Shorts are also shown on TV now. So I think that's going to be a very big difference long term as well, because that, again, hits older people. But I think you basically have to now make content for the platform. Like, the low-hanging fruit of just cross-posting and performing everywhere, that's been kind of that opportunity has been arbitraged away by people marketing on the platforms, creators.
I agree. I think that, yeah, the day of, like, you could make one piece of content and then just shotgun it to everything with whatever automation tool, it doesn't work anymore, because each platform has its own, like, idiosyncrasies in format and expectations. And so when you're not fulfilling that, they could see, you know, the people who are always online could see right through it. They know exactly what you did. And, you know, generative AI tools just make it much easier to try and format everything for a specific social media platform. I mean, I'm doing less with video. You know, it's like LinkedIn, Twitter, Facebook. But even there, it's like they expect and want different things.
Internally, we test everything, or we try to. And like, automation tools just get you dinged by algorithms.
Yeah, they know, like, it just because you didn't post it natively, we're already starting out minus 1 point from the algorithm.
Yeah, I mean, we tested 2 Facebook accounts. One of them in Spanish has like several hundred thousand followers, and the other one was automated, and guess which one blew up, right? So we've seen it on Facebook, we've seen it on Instagram, and we've seen it on TikTok.
So when creating a video, like, in your head, there's got to be a checklist. It's like, all right, these are the marks we got to hit, or like, here's the approach. What works, what doesn't? Give me the crash course.
Yeah, I mean, I think everyone's kind of talked about hooks and watch time and swipe rate. Like, those are the classic. Just a crash course, though. Hook is the first 3 seconds of your video. Typically on TikTok, a user only watches 1 or 2 seconds of a video before they make a decision of whether they want to see the whole thing through, right? So those first 3 seconds are extremely crucial. You have to make them interesting to the user. If you can get a hook rate of 70, 80%, you almost always go viral. Right? Because like, people are invested now and they'll watch some of the video afterwards. The second element of that is watch time. And that really depends on the video length you're going to. The shorter the video length, let's say under 10 seconds, you have to get like 150%, 200% watch time. Meaning people are actually rewatching the video, right? If it's over 30 seconds, you could kind of get 80%, 70%, 90%, still get views. But from the platform perspective, what they're really looking at is watch time, aka how many people are how many average hours are people watching your video, right? When you combine all those metrics. So just keep that in mind when making a video. You can actually get like a low swipe rate, 50%, but if you have a 58 second short, it'll still get a lot of views because 58 seconds is a lot of time to retain attention.
I need the hook. I think we've all figured that out. Is like that. That's what's going to make or break you initially. Going longer or shorter is riskier.
It really like again, I said all these caveats because it really depends. I think it's easier to go longer at this point. And the other thing I'll say is nobody wants to do long short form content. So we find that our videos that are 40 seconds long plus outperform. Just because there's not a lot of competition for that. And we're able to retain people throughout the whole length. But if you're doing shorter, you need to make sure people rewatch it. And that's where it gets really hard. But if you were to summarize our playbook and checklist, it's like hook, we'll edit it, but it has to be top quality, top notch. Does it grab everyone's attention in the first 3 seconds? Maybe we're on it through a committee in that case. And then after that, it's like, does it go over 30 seconds? And then we look through the video and our editing process is literally like, at any moment in this video, is anyone getting bored for longer than like 2 seconds? And if that's the case, then we do like another shot or we change the angle. And that usually like fixes that problem. But like, if you look at our editing, it's all very fast paced with a lot of motion, movement. And I think that makes a huge difference for us.
Today, I am thrilled to introduce our latest sponsor, Finale Inventory. Managing inventory could be a hassle, but Finale makes it a breeze. Here's a snippet from my chat with Pauline at Finale.
We work with sellers kind of across the spectrum, from like $1 million to $50 million, but it really is all about that complexity.
Whether you're a small startup or a multi-million dollar business, Finale's got you covered. And for our listeners, they've got something special.
When you call the team, mention Unofficial 2024, and your listeners can get 20% off their first 3 months with Finale.
Finale isn't just software. It's a growth partner for your e-commerce journey. Dive in with a free 2-week trial and discover the difference. Visit finaleinventory.com and don't forget to use the code unofficial2024 for your special discount. That's it. Stay tuned. Well, I'm scrolling through your YouTube and yeah, it's like Mini Katana, 9.3 million subscribers. Like top video, what has this got? 5.1 million likes, 120 million views. It's 15 seconds, 14 seconds long.
Yeah, people just rewatched that video and shared it with their friends like crazy. That's what's driving that.
Does this guy cut a bullet in half?
Yeah.
Or is it salt?
Or that's actually a BB gun.
Yeah, all right. So there's a video of a samurai cutting a BB shot out of a BB gun in half. That's insane.
Yeah, our most successful video has, I think it's like 800 million views at this point, and it's like a 50-second long video. And people are literally rewatching it. So if you look at the watch time metrics, actually, let me pull them up and just read them off to you.
Man, cut a ball bearing in half. That's insane.
So if you look at our most viewed video, sorry, give me a second. Just pull up analytics. Cool. So it's 35 seconds long, 819 million views. And the watch time on it is 93.3%. So people are literally watching 31.2 seconds of that 32 seconds. The swipe rate on that is 72%.
Some high quality content.
Yeah. And it's like, you know, the fact that it's shown to that many people and they all watch it that long, the platform loves that.
So what's your favorite video here? Or one you're proud of?
That bullet slice one, because Mr. Beast ended up doing like his own take of that. And he hired the same guy.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah. Jimmy's a cool guy. I think the most recent one that I love the most, we just posted it today, I think, actually. It's about candy. Can we use candy as seasoning?
Yeah, what's the verdict?
It's crushing. I mean, we've been testing candy content on this channel to see if we can like use it as a billboard for other brands. And the answer is yes, the audience really resonates with content as long as it's done well.
So even though it's like the Mini Katana channel, you could still, you're posting about the candy.
Yeah, I think what's weird about us is we've approached a critical mass where there's not a lot of people that buy swords, and there's not a lot of people that are interested in swords. At the 2 million sub count, we probably have them all. Like, that's it in the world. So what happened that we were able to expand beyond that so much is we started thinking more and more like a creator. At a certain point, we were just like, you know what? We're gonna hit a wall. We're starting to see it. Let's just start trying to make the best possible video and maybe future swords in there if it makes sense. So that's how we've grown so much. And that's why we'll get to 20 million subs this year, because we really are. If we weren't Mini Katana, we'd just be a creator. But because we are this e-commerce store, people kind of conflate the two.
So you view it as like, this is creator-led brand.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think we'll be the biggest short channel on YouTube, given like another year or two.
Wouldn't you already be like top 100? I would imagine you're pretty close.
Social Blade says overall for YouTube, we're 284 in the US. And I think like my guess is this, the top short channel is probably the top 100 there.
Just remarkable. Looking back on it, like from when you started with YouTube Shorts to now, how has your approach to content creation changed?
Yeah, I mean, like I kind of described it earlier where we're now making the best possible video. And you can really see that. If you scroll through our videos, some of them don't even make sense. If you like, oh, they're selling swords, why are they posting this video? The biggest hack a content creator has, or the first biggest hack, is editing. As soon as they hire editors and they get that down to a T, it frees up so much of their time. So with the same creators, very talented people on our team, we can pump out 90 videos a month as opposed to 60 because we just nailed editing so well and we built so many systems around that. And the creators can focus more on just ideation and, you know, shooting content. So that was the second biggest change. And I think the third biggest change was like just launching the candy brand because like we did TAM out on the sword brand rather quickly in the first 2 years.
You think you're like, look, everybody who could buy a sword has heard of us. There's only so many.
Yeah, absolutely. And that became really apparent towards the end of year two when we just stopped growing month over month. Year three, we were flat. And that surprises people, but I'm honest. The views don't translate into sales. The attention doesn't translate into sales if the product doesn't meet the audience. Like it doesn't meet the TAM.
And so is that what drove you to start this new venture, Kanpai Foods?
Yeah. I was looking for a while, for like a year and a half, as to what was next. I actually started two other brands before Kanpai that flopped. Again, like going back to that tinkering. But Kanpai really took off. And that's what we ended up doubling down on very quickly.
All right. Tell me about Kanpai Food. What's it sell?
It sells freeze-dried candy. It's a new category of confectionery. So most people don't know what that is. That's a good thing because we can educate the masses. And I ran into it originally 2 years on TikTok because a lot of SMB started selling it and going viral producing the product. So we've been watching it for a while. We just didn't want to go into it without being sure it wasn't a fad.
And I've had these. It's like, it's freeze dry. It's light. It's puffy. It's crunchy. What you're making is sour, which sour is delicious. Why'd you go with sour as a flavor?
We're picking viral verticals. Sour candy is very viral and like people love sour challenges. Spicy is incredibly viral and people love like gimmicky viral challenges.
Like the one chip challenge.
Exactly. And it's like, also it's easy to make content with because it's like, you can just kind of film yourself making it. So that's kind of, we just picked what we thought people would resonate with on a viral level basically. And it's translated well to shelves.
You've got this mini katana experience. It's quite incredible. But you hit a wall with it. How did that influence what you're doing with Kanpai?
Yeah, I mean, the first mistake entrepreneurs make is before they start a business. And that's like product. And that was me. Like, I'll be straight up. Going to swords, probably not the best idea. I'm infinitely grateful I did it. And I'm infinitely grateful for my team and the experience. But also, it really, like, we have the best team in the world at this. We're not being properly rewarded for inventing a playbook. And that just frustrates me personally. So for Kanpai, we picked the most mass market thing we could think of where we could corner it, the attention of that market very quickly. And because there's no one else marketing this properly, like that's what we can do.
You're saying, all right, it's this very broad category. It's photogenic. It's colorful. It lends itself to the challenges. You can make content around it and it'll be attractive. You can get it on store shelves. It's not age restricted. There are a lot of advantage to this. And then, you know, total addressable market, TAM, 1,000 times larger, at least. It's huge.
Yeah.
Everybody likes candy. I get why you diversified into this. Food industry, consumer packaged goods, this seems hard. What surprised you about it?
The biggest problem with it is that there's no manufacturing setup for it. So we are the manufacturer.
You had to spin up your own manufacturing operation.
Yes, which is a... I don't think an operator has felt true pain until they've set up their own manufacturing operation. That's what was most surprising, the cash flow required, just the OpEx investment to get started. And it just blew away whatever projections I first put on the paper in terms of cost. But also, I know the opportunity size. So it's like, you know, let's just do it. Let's get out of the way. if anybody listening to this is considering going to manufacturing, especially for food, it's going to cost more than you think. Way more.
Why did it cost more than you think? Like, what were those challenges you ran into in standing that up?
It's just the most regulated space. It's food. So you have to do everything very cleanly and by the book. So like my sword brand, for example, you can start that. You can have the inventory in your apartment. You can ship it out yourself. There's no equivalent to that for food. You have to really have all your ducks in a row from the beginning. So even if you're not manufacturing it, it's capital intensive because there's a huge upfront investment with a manufacturer, right? And that sense is completely different for most DTC brands because they can find a way to start with 5K, basically, like I did, which is not feasible in food, in my opinion.
Right. The other thing you mentioned at the start was that the packaging is designed to stand out on shelves. And I've heard this about, like, that this is a critical thing for consumer packaged goods. Tell me about researching that and your package design.
Yeah, I think when you're doing DTC, it's very data driven, and it's very numbers game. You can optimize your ads, you can optimize CBR, you can optimize your pop up subscription rates. With consumer, especially when you're launching, is so different because you're taking best guesses a lot of the time. There's not a lot of data to back it up, and you can do a lot of research, but still at the end of the day, when you make decisions on your packaging, you're going based off your gut, right? I'll explain how we thought about it. We looked at the competitive landscape. We realized nobody looks like candy. So our position was we are going to look extremely like candy. And also then we looked at who's buying this. And it's children, right? Children, they love mascots. So we added a mascot as a part of the process afterwards. And the third step to that was this is where actually we might have gone wrong. We don't know yet. 60 through 80% of Generation Z loves Japanese stuff. They love anime. They like consume it like at crazy volumes. So we decided, okay, let's add a Japanese theme to it and see how that goes, right? So that was a gamble. But it's like those were the three elements, and when meshed together, we just got great designers and got concepts in the door. But I think the mistakes people make are they just don't do enough research. And it's weird because it's so easy. Go to Target and look at your category. Like, I saw this coffee brand launch. What is it? Happy Coffee. Who's Robert Downey Jr.?
Robert Downey Jr. is his own coffee brand?
That's the other thing. I'm like, when is this going to get, like, oversaturated? Every celebrity is going to have their own brand.
Well, when I Googled celebrity coffee brand, and there was an article from a month ago, the 18 best celebrity coffee brands.
18.
And they all want to get on that, like, that Ryan Reynolds train.
When I look at this, I'm like, how do you get it so wrong? This looks like a Band-Aids or...
It's an end cap display that doesn't... You're right. It does not look at all like coffee. The branding on this thing screams multivitamins.
Yeah, exactly. So like, that's what I'm talking about. Like, how can you get that so wrong when all you have to do is look at your shelf, your category, and engineer that backwards to just stand out within that category? This is like, I would walk by this and be like, that's not coffee. Which is a bad sign.
Yeah. They have to write coffee on it for you to know. They didn't even have a picture of the beans.
I think what I love about retail, though, is that it is very vibes driven. It's very relationship driven. And I think like that's also where a lot of people get it wrong. No, like buyers will take a lot of risks with you if you are just a good person, right? If you're genuinely a good human being, and people on DTC are very used to meta and data. Like, those aren't human beings. You need to go actually interact with somebody, meet them at a trade show floor, and text them pictures of your kids and say happy birthday when it's their birthday, and really manage that. And that's how we've had a lot of success so fast.
You're out there building relationships with retail buyers?
Yeah, real people. Being viral is not enough. Having a great product is not enough. It's a people business.
What other misconceptions do you think are out there? If I'm like, if I've only lived in, online selling DTC, and then I'm moving toward retail, what's going to surprise me?
How slow it is too. On Meta, you can ramp up really quickly. And I see it happen all the time where a brand goes from 0 to 50 to 200. If they can manage their cash flow properly, they could pull it off. And maybe with my marketing, which is viral, you can do the same thing as long as you can manage that attention. With retail, they're going to do a sample order. And if it's a big retailer, they might be still a big order. But you got to be patient and build out that relationship and make sure it does well. So let's say Hot Topic, they put in a $13,000 order. Maybe they don't put in a reorder for 2 months while they're gathering data. But if you work that relationship, they'll come back at you with six figures. And then they're going to start reordering at that pace every month. And I think a lot of DC people just don't have that level of patience.
It's old school. It's moving slower. It's network driven. It is quite a bit different, isn't it?
But I think that's why it's so moody too. Here's the unfortunate reality. But the fact of the matter is people can rip your ads. They can rip your landing pages. They can rip your emails. They cannot rip your relationships in retail, right? They can't just rip your, they can rip your packaging, but they can't rip your relationships and they can't just put their stuff on shelves. So I think it's old school, but it's much stronger in that sense too.
You're opening my eyes in ways I had previously not imagined. Hey, Shopify sellers, listen up. Get ready to unleash your creativity with the brand new landing page builder from Zipify Pages. This isn't just Zipify's biggest update ever. It's a revolution in building Shopify store designs. Say goodbye to clunky designs and hello to total customization. With Zipify's new builder, you're the boss of every pixel on your site. Drag, drop, swap elements, it's all in your hands to craft the most effective layout for conversions. Zipify Pages come straight from the founder of a $180 million e-com empire. These templates aren't just pretty, they've been tested in the arena with a nine-figure Shopify store. And it's easy to use. A few clicks and your product pages, marketing pages, blog pages, even your homepage will be looking sharp and conversion optimized for maximum sales. And because these templates are tested in a nine-figure Shopify store first, you know they actually work. So why settle for the standard when you can have a site that's uniquely yours? You could try Zipify Pages in their brand new builder for free for 14 days when you go to zipify.com/Kurt. That's zipify.com/KURT to try Zipify Pages for free. And if you tried Pages in the past and thought it wasn't for you, you owe it to yourself to try it again because the new Zipify Pages is a game changer. Zipify.com/Kurt. Check it out. All right, looking backwards, you go back to 2020. What would you do differently the second, if you had a chance to go around again?
I would have gone harder on short form video. And actually, I think this advice applies to people listening today too. I meet a lot of people who have not taken the opportunity seriously. It's still there. There's still a deficit of content on platforms. There's especially good content because if take a few hours, scroll to YouTube Shorts or Instagram Reels and look at the quality of content. Really look at it because you're going to realize 50% of it is garbage. And with a lot of practice and patience, you could probably be better than those people, right? That's the first thing. The second thing is I would have picked a higher TAM product. If you're a first-time founder, you don't know that. Like, you don't know what to recognize that red flag. So I think the third thing, though, is like I would be less hard on myself as well. Entrepreneurship is a long journey, and especially if you're young, you can really hedge risk. As a concept, if you're like, I'll say in your 30s or 20s, you should just be doing stuff because you can always like take a step back and rebuild, except if you have a family. But like I would have taken more risk. I would have moved faster.
I think some of that though, like I have those same feelings, but I think some of it is survivorship bias. By virtue of making it this far and surviving, you're like, well, I should have just done the same thing, but faster, harder, better. And so to your earlier point, I think you're right. We should both be easier on ourselves.
Yeah, I think survivorship bias is a real thing. And I mean, seemingly lucky, but that's also why I'm realistic with people. Hey, I did a second business that's growing really fast and I have experience and I still failed twice before I started that third business.
What were the other two that flopped?
I started a figurine. I wanted to do figurines because like Japanese swords, figurines, were collectibles. And the second one was, it's not a flop. It's still ongoing, but it just hasn't grown as fast as Compi. So I can't pay attention to it. It's just like an anime app, basically. But the point I'm making there is like I still have a fail rate. And when I first started Mini Katana, I failed 7 times before starting that business and having a large success in a big way. So I think people are just hard on themselves in general. And like it just takes perseverance and patience.
It sounds like you're hungry for knowledge, experience. You've got all these side hustles and passion projects and multiple businesses now. Where do you go to learn? Like, books, podcasts, YouTube?
YouTube, Twitter, and podcasts. I unfortunately don't have a lot of time to read anymore. The podcasts offer you a quick window into the same experience. Founders Podcast, fantastic, right? Gives you a summary, high-level summary of the books. This podcast, similar, but YouTube, free knowledge repository for anything you want to look up. I looked up food manufacturing videos on YouTube. Like, I didn't hire consultants. I just looked it up on YouTube. It's kind of crazy that all that information is free. And Twitter, I used to connect with people. It's just been we connected via Twitter, right?
Yeah.
And I even put out this recent tweet. Hey, I'm very short of capital for Compi because, you know, we just keep getting appeals from retailers and I have to start turning them down. And I got a lot of people coming in just saying, hi, I have resources. Hey, I might want to invest. And I recommend all three, really. They have different uses.
So I'm kind of curious, what's your day-to-day, your typical day-to-day look like?
There's two calls, one with leadership team at Minikatana, leadership team at Compi. Minikatana is set and systems are set. That's my one interaction a day with Minikatana at this point. That's really great because the rest of the day I can focus on Compi. I go to the kitchen. I'm 100% managing operations. My co-founder is the one driving a lot of the sell-through on shelves, and he's focused on that. But I'm like the sweaty ops guy right now. On the side, I'm doing marketing, but if the product is really good, marketing sometimes feels pointless. And what I mean by that is, like, in HexCloud's case, like, remember at one point they just cut ad spend because they're selling out so fast? And I feel like we're early stage, but it's a similar scenario where it's like, yes, we could viral market, but we're getting new POs and there's like organic sell-through on shelf because packaging and experience has been so great.
Looking forward, what are your future goals here? Like Minikatana, you said you want to hit 20 million in subscribers, be number one on YouTube Shorts. What other goals are on the horizon for you?
The Compi is going to be a $100 million plus brand. I think that's the trajectory. And Minikatana will be a massive media platform of 100 million plus subs under 5 years.
I have no doubt that you'll make both of those things happen.
Yeah, I think so. And I think, I mean, it's possible because I have a really good team. Like that's the hidden unlock to every great entrepreneur, like hiring the right people and having amazing, loyal people.
How do you find the right people?
I find recent graduates and I just look for the smartest ones. And then I just like hire them and give them way too much responsibility. Half the time they crush. You'd be really surprised. So like you look at Minikatana's team, it's all young people. And that's not to say like there's nothing wrong with hiring experienced people, but that's just the way I do things. Especially for creative roles though, I think that's the way to go. Young people who are super hungry, who know the platforms, they're going to crush it for you. And that's really key. It's that hunger.
I love it. Where can we go to learn more about you?
I tweet profusely. So it's just the Isaac Med, the ISAACMED.
And of course, I'll include that in the show notes. Oh, I love I just loaded up the Compi Food site and just the packaging, the product, and then the way it photographs. Oh, it's good. Encourage people to check this out.
It looks like candy. That's like...
Candy should look like candy.
Exactly. And deodorant should look like deodorant. Coffee should look like coffee.
Yeah, coffee for sure. I was offended by RDJ's approach to coffee. I am.
There you go. Yeah. We have a coffee SKU. I should send you some. It's like unreleased.
Oh my God. Unreleased? The limited edition ultra secret VIP coffee?
It's like freeze-dried coffee balls.
That sounds fabulous.
That's how I reacted when I discovered that you could do that.
What is there other like random weird shit that you're just like freeze drying to see if you could do it?
Dude, we're throwing everything in there. Like, our daily is just like we're testing 24 new items.
How does freeze drying work?
It's a process of sublimation in a vacuum chamber. And what that means is when there's a vacuum, things like physics change slightly. And the way water behaves in particular changes, right? So like say you have you're heating up a gummy worm. It's just going to melt. The sugar eventually is going to melt, right? And the water along with it. But in a vacuum, gummy worm, the molecules react by puffing up. So that's why you're getting that crunchy texture and there's no moisture in it. Again, like it's just a way to think about it. It's heating stuff up in a vacuum.
Well, you know what? I could probably learn about it on YouTube.
Absolutely.
Watch a few videos.
that's how I did it.
That sounds like fun. I would definitely, if I had such access to such a thing, I'd be abusing it. Look, let's freeze dry a hard-boiled egg. It's like it really, really insane. That's the craziest thing I could come up with, hard-boiled egg.
There's a ton of people, like, originally survivalists were buying these things because if you freeze-dry stuff, it makes it shelf-stable forever.
Oh, interesting.
So that's where, like, it started really springing up outside of industrial uses, right? But it's like cupcakes or croissants or whatever. Like, people, you can make it at home, but then there's going to be guys like me who have a brand and make it on a commercial level. That's the way I see it.
Isaac, this has been a lot of fun. Thank you for doing it. I appreciate it.
Yeah, I hope it was a... Hope it was a good show for the people listening.
I'm sure it was. And if they, you know, they could follow you on Twitter and of course, absolutely check out check out these two brands and what they're doing on social media. Absolutely worthwhile and inspirational. But yeah, Isaac, again, thank you. And this has been great. We'll end it there. Crowdfunding campaigns are great. You can add social proof and urgency to your product pre-orders while reducing risk of failure. But with traditional crowdfunding platforms, you're paying high fees and giving away control, all while your campaign is lost in a sea of similar offers. It can be frustrating. That's why we built Crowdfunder, the Shopify app that turns your Shopify product pages into your own independent crowdfunding campaigns. We originally created Crowdfunder for our private clients, and it was so successful, we turned it into an app that anyone can use. Today, merchants using Crowdfunder have raised millions collectively. With Crowdfunder, you'll enjoy real-time tracking, full campaign control, and direct customer engagement. And it's part of the Built for Shopify program, so you know it's easy to use. So say goodbye to high fees and hello to successful store-based crowdfunding. Start your free trial and transform your Shopify store into a pre-order powerhouse today. Search Crowdfunder in the Shopify App Store to get started.